And I feel like I'm clinging to a cloud. I can't.
With your Mayo Clinic Radio Health Minute,
I get misty just holding your hand. Moment you're near, you can say that you're leading me on, but it's just what I want you to do. Don't you notice how? Knowing my right foot from my left, my hat from my glove, I'm too misty and too much in love. I'm just too misty.
Time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now here's Carol.
Good morning and welcome to the Carol Cox Show. A lovely day here in Hawaii, and as usual, I'm just so happy to be here. And that was Sarah Vaughn's Look at Me. So anyway, we got what I think is a follow-up. About 2 weeks ago, we had Mr. Rod Tam, former councilman, state representative, state senator. And we had him in, and we talked about the Jones Act, and I said we would have make an effort to talk about it, and I'd bring an actual pro and con perspective, and I contacted Jay Friedheim, but he was not available and later, but we've already talked to him, and there is a show, Jay Friedheim, and we're going to post the two shows, put a link there, and then if you have any questions, you know, we'll do another show and keep, because the Jones Act, it's like keeping up with the Joneses, basically. What is it? And it's the Jones Act is a maritime law related, and there are many pros and cons about it, many issues. People have concern. It's better known as the Merchant Marine Act of 1920. And, again, it has many implications, and there's a constant discussion about removing that because its placement impedes the economy, hinders the economy and the livelihood or the well-being of the people of this state and other territories such as Alaska and some portion of Alaska or all of Alaska and Puerto Rico. But we're going to get into greater details, and I have questions, and we'll talk. And Mr. John Carroll, attorney, we've had him on the show in the past, and Rod Tam is here, and so we're going to talk. And gentlemen, thank you for joining me, and share with the listeners what it is, and introduce yourself first. And I'd like to start off as talking about what does the Jones Act generate for economy? What are the benefits? And then and also if we could touch on it in this conversation, we are advocating for change. Many of us are saying change and modify the Jones Act or the Maritime Merchant Marine Act. What studies do we rely on? I mean, formal studies that we can rely on, and what models are we relying on to say that this is a good thing, it's a godsend, or however you want to describe it. So feel free to just, we'll talk around, and I have many other questions, and help yourself, and we can go as long as you wish. And if you have questions for Mr. Carroll or Mr. Tam, feel free to call in 524-1080. Now, if you're over in Nanakuli and you're having a problem getting it, or you might have to evacuate your home or whatever because of the fire, unfortunate. John is already apologizing for having this cough, but I remember I had the same cough, so, you know, we won't discriminate. So, anyway, that's where we are with this, and so go ahead, Mr. Carroll, if you would.
Good morning, Carroll, and I want to thank you very much for inviting us here today. I'm with another person who is against the Jones Act. His name is John Carroll. He's a former state senator of the state of Hawaii, and he's also an attorney in private practice. He was a state senator a long time ago when I was only a budget analyst there back in 1978. Mm. Right, and he was well respected there. I may say, you know, he's a Republican by party, and I'm a Democrat by party, but we get along very well because essentially it's one thing that we both have in common is the people, the concern for the people of the state of Hawaii. We want to service them. We're going to talk today about the Jones Act. And basically, like you said, Carol, it was first initiated in 1920. It's an outdated legislation of the federal government. And it was meant to protect in terms of against competition from worldwide, when you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, too, there was concern about using the private sector of the ships, United States ships, American ships, whereby military government could control them, basically. And it was a matter of controlling factors. And you didn't have the free trade, and in some sense, within the United States.
Mm-hmm.
With that, I'm going to turn it over to my friend Jeff Carroll.
Now, when you say that it was done for, as you explained, but it had more far-reaching intentions as well, because we were a young nation.
Yes.
In 1920s, and we had war on after war, and we were in various skirmishes and at odds with one another. Was it also part of building and to protect a young nation forging its way in the world community?
Yes, in some sense it was. But you keep in mind that we're very so young that Great Britain was way advanced over the United States of America in terms of maritime itself. And
mm-hmm.
So there was concern about being a world power for the United States, basically.
Mm-hmm.
They want to gain control of that.
Yeah.
And I believe that's what's happening now. In fact, in some sense, there's scare in the military of the United States that now China has built up their fleet. And I've seen their fleet. I've been to China 20 times and also communicated with the government officials in China, and be surprised, they've grown a lot.
Their fleet, do you mean of container ships or
their fleet
military?
In terms of container ships and military also, too. You know, it's because of their cost factor is a lot less in terms of building ships than we have.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't worry about the Chinese military ships, because what I've been reading is that one missile will take care of that. You don't even have to sweat. What do they say, John? You from the military. Aircraft carriers, you might as well just put a bullseye on it.
Yeah, it's an absurdity in this time of war. Could I add something about what you're talking about? First of all, the Merchant Marine Act of 1920 was put together primarily to ensure that we would have a vibrant merchant sea force, because we had apparently had built it up a bit during World War One, but we had seen the effects of not having it. So Congress went and took it on themselves to amend this. The Merchant Marine Act is basically designed to protect merchant seamen from oppressive ship owners. That's what it's all about. Mm-hmm. But what they put into the act was that if a ship was not built in America, manned by Americans, owned by Americans, flagged in America, and maintained in America, it could not travel in interstate commerce. Mm-hmm. The idea was that this will give American shipbuilders a chance to build up this great fleet. We'll be able to have the best merchant fleet in the entire world. As it's worked out, and this is one of the reasons I'm so against it, it's had the exact opposite effect. If an enemy wanted to damage us, and let's say we did have a big merchant fleet, if they put this law in effect in about another 30, 40 years, we'd be down to 300 or 400 ships. So it's had the exact opposite effect of what it was designed to do. Now, there's no question that what they originally intended was valid, but what has happened now is a complete disaster, and that's why I've been fighting against this thing since I was in the State House in 1970. I put in the first Anti-Jones Act resolution.
Now, Libya, and we're just going to jump around, but again, I definitely want to, because I've tried to read and scratch up something on the benefits of modifying the Jones Act. I've heard this chorus. I've listened to it. I've watched many people parade it and discuss it. But I'm yet to find a single document that says, based on this study, based on this scientific or economical model, it's good for us. And here are the aspects of it, the intricacies of it. I haven't seen that, nor have I seen it on the other side. So, and we want to talk about our legislators here. I know Mazie Hirono has openly. What about the federal politicians, the elected officials?
All four of them are totally in favor of the Jones Act, as was Linda Lingle, and that's why I actually endorsed I endorsed Mazie Hirono against Linda Lingle, because at least Mazie had her mind was still open on the issue, as opposed to Lingle, who was totally closed, and who had actually we had a plank in the Republican Party platform for many years to get rid of the Jones Act restrictions altogether. And Carol, for your information, I will take your email address and I'll send you all kinds of studies on why this act is so damaging to us.
Right, but I mean specifically, because we're looking, I don't want to speak in a generic sense that this is the globe we're looking at. We're talking about specific territories that are being, and that have we looked at the uniqueness of each economy, and how will Hawaii, which I'm more interested in, I hear that it's also Puerto Rico is an issue, but then, you know, they have their own forces to deal with their concerns and their issues. But Hawaii, what specifically? I mean, that's only fair, I would think. If there's a model that shows it's really good, then the debate should be ended. No need for a debate, and we should hurry out and change this and modify it.
Amen.
If it's not, but I think that's the quagmire. I don't believe that we have that aspect of it that we can show. Here's a benefit. We're saying it's good. We want it, but then there are other things. Who is behind the movement? And we'll talk about that. But I don't want to get ahead of myself.
Carol, you know, you mentioned in terms, what is the benefit of the Jones Act? And that's the question, basically. It's not very clear. Mm-hmm. It has never been very clear. And remember now, the Jones Act was established in 1920. Mm-hmm. And it was way, way before Hawaii was recognized in terms of as a territory, basically of the United States or a state. Now we're a state of Hawaii. We're a state of the United States of America, and so is Alaska. Now, there's a lot of prejudice, when you call it that, in terms by Congress or by the United States as a whole against Alaska and Hawaii. And yet we're states. Well, you know, why? I could see if we were not states, we were territories or just colonies per se, but we're a state, we're not being treated fairly. And then, to make it very clear, we're looking at it in terms of economic factor here. The economic factor is one, a consumer being able to buy goods at a reasonable price. You know, all goods basically come from Asian countries, whether your shirt, your pants, and your clothing, basically, your shoes, they all come from Asian countries. In fact, like I said, I've been to China 20 times. I've seen the factories there. You have Nike, for example, which is an American product. It's manufactured in China, quite frankly. You just put the label on. But then what happens is a cost for that shoes is sometimes three times the amount as what you buy it in the United States, because it has to be shipped to California or West Coast. Then it has to be shipped by Matson here, which is a monopoly in Hawaii.
Let me,
the cost is sky high.
I want to be fair, because I got so many questions, and each time we talk, and I want to be fair to you, and I want the fluidity of your presentation to be there, so I don't want to be disjointed. But in regards to that, here's why I think it's best I let you guys have the microphone, and I'll raise my questions later, because it'll appear that I'm disruptive. And I would offer this. If you say that all the ships are coming in from and bringing the shirts and the slippers and the pants and the boots and the bags, then I would say, well, what the hell? It's our industry that used to manufacture here and took it abroad and then turn around and now relying and then saying, well, you know, we also want to change the law and allow these ships to bring it in. Hell, we got the rest that way. Give us a whole kit and caboodle. So in order to be fair and show some fluidity in this conversation, please take the microphone, because I can see so many questions just pop up, and I don't think I would be.
Well, in Hawaii, in the history of Hawaii, we had a lot of goods that were shipped out before, but then it became over expensive, you know, because you have a control of monopoly. And so basically, our manufacturing industry has pretty much died off.
Yeah, well, if I could interject, first of all, we don't have a study that I know of exactly what you're talking about, although I have seen some private studies that are done, and I will send them to you.
Okay.
But the main problem with the Jones Act is people don't understand that it doesn't prohibit foreign ships from coming here. It prohibits them from operating in interstate commerce. So the net effect is, if a ship wants to bring automobiles, say, from Japan to, say, 500 for here and 1,500 for California, they cannot drop the 500 here and commercially sell that other 1,500 in California. Alaska has a statute that tells the governor he's supposed to do everything possible to get rid of the Jones Act because of the impact on Alaska's economy. I can get that statute if you want to see it. The other thing that I have studied over the years is the effect of shipping on our costs, which go back to my first time when I ran for Congress, and I saw what would happen if we had a shipping strike to toilet paper and all the other things that everybody worries about when we had that. So that's what got my interest in it. And then I studied and started looking at places like Singapore and Hong Kong. For instance, Singapore has about 250 square miles of land, and they have a gross domestic product in excess of $100 billion a year. Hawaii has about 6,000 square miles of land and about $67 billion per year, most of which is military, government, and tourism. Our agriculture is absolutely down the toilet. Costs of herbicides, pesticides, all the different farm implements we could be getting from Russia or China or Indonesia, Korea, they all have to go to California or Seattle or someplace and then bring them back here. So the net effect on our economy has been absolutely horrendous, and you don't have to be a genius to figure it out. We've done studies comparing West Coast costs and Hawaii costs, and just one glaring example, since I'm a milk lover, is milk right now, even in the U.S. commissary, runs close to $9 a gallon. It's about $2.85 in Seattle. Now, everybody, including the poorest people, are very, very seriously impacted by this law, and you don't need a study. All you got to do is go to the store and look. Mm-hmm. And so what's happened now is the shippers, and this, remember, this law was designed to protect ship builders so that we would have lots of ships to go, that we'd have them available in time of war. That's the big thing about the Jones Act as far as that particular law is concerned, that section of the law. But right now, the net effect of this is that the shippers want to get an exception to the build requirements so that they can buy the foreign ships but still retain the interstate commerce block. And that is an absolute crime, as far as I'm concerned, against the people of the state of Hawaii if that happens. Okay, well, anyway, that's a kind of preliminary where I'm coming from.
Mm-hmm. Let me add to this in terms of the economic side. You know, basically, people who haven't traveled worldwide don't realize in terms of traveling time is money. Okay. In the case in terms of Hawaii to that distance to Asian countries, it's a shorter period of time to travel than from Asian countries or from the mainland United States, the West Coast, to Asian countries. You know, for example, I remember traveling to California. It takes about 4 to 5 hours. Now, if you travel to Asian countries, like even Japan, it takes 10 hours. Okay? So time is money. What happened is when the ships having the goods from Asian countries, the clothing, as I said, they can't come here and load off in terms of stores here that want to buy clothing. And then these are name brands, basically, that are manufactured in Asian countries, although custom designed and because of American brands. Mm-hmm. So they go to, say, California from the Asian countries. And remember the time difference. It goes there. It takes a lot of time in terms of shipping. Mm-hmm. Then it's docked over there. Stays on a dock for days and days or weeks and weeks. Okay, then it's shipped over here by essentially one company, Matson, which former Senator, D.C. Senator Danny Noe had stocks in. Okay, mm-hmm. And basically that's why he was against amending the Jones Act, because his conflict of interest. But anyway.
But from a Republican's angle, the Trent Lott.
Well, it's
also
not a matter of Republican.
Well, no.
Or Democrat,
but I mean, when we say Inouye had stock in the company, Trent Lott built ships in America, so wouldn't he be more apt to be pissing and moaning about not changing the Jones Act?
Absolutely.
So
yeah.
I just want to I want to dispel that there seems to be with the Jones Act, he's accompanied by some ghost that nobody seemed to want to put a name to him or tell his age or anything. But the reality is, going back to the agriculture, you say that it costs, our agriculture has gone up. Well, here in Hawaii, that's why I don't know about Alaska, and I'm ignorant to Alaska's strategies and needs. But I can say this, part of the main factor in that we've lost our agriculture is because our legislators are just too damn dumb to understand that if you give it away to houses and freeways and railroads, then you are not going to grow onions and peppers and chilies and what have you. So maybe that also be a factor. And that's what causes me concern when I hear, I'm all for change, but it should be, personally, it should be a change for a reason rather than a purpose of acquiring monies and saying, well, the agriculture department is impacted. And the reality is, whole peely. We struggled, and you mentioned Linda Lingle, no net loss in ag lands, and how much have we lost?
Yeah, oh, this is absurd. Yeah, by the way, raising that issue, I was in the legislature when we passed that or adopted the 78 Constitution, and one of my main issues, which I had raised legislatively prior to that time, was the preservation of prime ag land, and for this state Supreme Court to rule against Eric Seitz on his position is absolutely criminal. I'm trying to figure out how to file a lawsuit to put that all together, because this, the rail, the ho'opili, the endangered species impact on the owls and migratory birds there is absolutely absurd. And we've got our federal officials that are sitting on their hands, and all this stuff's going on, and you don't hear a peep about it, and they don't do anything about it, mm-hmm. and it's just infuriating to me. So I'm hoping Brother Tam here is going to get involved in politics again and bring his leadership.
He announced here that he was going to go for senator.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Well,
then,
may I say something then, because I'm pretty sure when he gets his name in the paper again, as he used to frequently, his issue of his criminal background will come into play. So I would just like to make a comment, if I may. What Rod Tam did, and which I didn't know till fairly recently, was he used county money to buy lunch for people who are working as volunteers to put up the Christmas tree decorations in the state of Hawaii. And there are people, somebody in that governmental sector that he works in did not like him or what he's doing, and that was his crime. And that is total bunch of you-know-what.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I'd just like to say that. And I'm going to back him, even though I'm a Republican, for the state Senate. So.
Oh, thank you, John. You know, going back in terms of...
Well, regarding the newspaper, when his name, he's probably going to have to pass, and he's going to have a hell of a time getting in the newspaper, because right now there's a relationship between the newspaper and the media and Kurt Lovable Caldwell.
Oh, yeah.
The guy the other day stood up and to put his pants on, and they did an article on him. How great he looks, and how great he is able to put his pants on. Well, that's a natural, I'm exaggerating, but no one is asking about his ability to take tax dollars, what she calls donations, campaign donations from contractors, understand, and then come out and boast about having more than $1,200,000 in his war campaign. We're not at war. You're serving the people.
Amen.
And the same people that you get. But anyway, we don't have to worry about Rod unless he got lots of money. They may try to go negative on him. But Kurt Caldwell, I think, not even skeletons. It's obvious we got failed policies. We got corruption and abuse and use of our city contracts and all. And he shows up on the morning TV and the newspaper with his face gracing it. And he's in battle with the chief of police and his family. That's all orchestrated, in my opinion. This mayor and his goon squad is actually up to. So that's my version of it.
Well, you know, one of the issues that has come up, it will constantly come up, is the rail. And people have asked me, who's responsible for this financial accountability? And they say basically, initial part of the rail was started by Mayor Mufi Hanneman. But then who was orchestrated in terms of the setup was basically a former mayor, what was his name now? He was a prosecutor.
Carlisle?
Yeah.
Peter Carlisle.
And basically, he does well as a prosecutor, but he's not an administrator, so he messed it up. And they used to call him the Joker, because he could never answer questions, so he joked around it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then you have in terms of the current mayor, Kurt Caldwell. Basically, your financial accountability is just not there, because he doesn't know how to administer things. And now he's trying to blame in terms of HART, H-A-R-T, commission, but then don't forget HRT is under Kurt Caldwell, so he is responsible for financial accountability. It's the contracts that has been established and so forth. They're poor planning. There's no foresight. Now what's going to happen in the future is we as taxpayers, whether it be businesses or residential, are really going to pay for it, quite frankly.
Amen.
They're going to put us out of our house, our single-family homes and so forth, because property tax is going to be so sky high, we're going to be all of us, most of us going to be homeless, especially senior citizens. You know, within the state of Hawaii, the senior county of Honolulu, over 60% of the residents are senior citizens, living on fixed incomes. So we really are in trouble in terms of because of the rail. Rail may be good in terms of having mass transportation, but is the financial accountability. Now imagine, if I may say, if a person wants to buy a house, and if you can't afford in terms of paying your monthly mortgage, you're not going to get that loan. And so what happens is the same thing like the rail. you know, there has never been any financial planning, basically, for the present or the future, called cost factor, and the revenues that we collect in it. Now, right now, what's happening with Kirk Caldwell's administration, they depend on grants, money from the state and the federal government. Now, what's going to happen after the construction? We're going to be left hanging the holding the bag, so to speak, by the taxpayers in the state of Hawaii. I mean, more in terms of the city kind of Honolulu, because it's actually your property taxes are going to go sky high. Now, for those who are renters, your rent is going to go double the amount, basically. And so it's going to be where you're going to be homeless. Or you're going to have to go live with some relative. And by the way, homeless is a factor whereby it's not only those who live on the street, but there are those who are family members that live in your house, maybe your children, your own children, your grandchildren, and so forth. You are actually subsidizing their living accommodations.
Yeah, Rod, and by, can I just interject in that vein? The group that asked me to invite you to their meeting, that's what they're all about. And there's some people like Mike Uwechi, Dr. Uwechi, who's been fighting the rail altogether. They just want to shut it all down. Realistically, I don't think it's possible, but they're looking at a multifaceted lawsuit against the rail, against the whole Pili intervention, as well as the environmental impact. And we're looking at gross negligence on the part of the initial planning all the way through. And we know that there have been other lawsuits that have failed, but this area that you're raising is very, very critical to the whole future of the state. It's not quite as important as the Jones Act, but it's right up there with it, because it really could bankrupt. And by the way, Carol, going back to the Jones Act, Puerto Rico has declared bankruptcy, and they said it's due to the Jones Act. And we're facing the same thing, because we have essentially put our economy, our agricultural sector particularly, in extreme jeopardy. And if we don't get it fixed, we're really on a downhill slope. And I that is why even I'm quite old, but I just feel so strongly about it. I'm still on the soapbox on these issues. So
actually, if I may relate to it, our listeners out there, the state of Hawaii and the city of Honolulu is actually bankrupt. We're in a deficit. They say deficit. It's a nice way of saying that we're bankrupt. Mm-hmm. But actually, we're bankrupt. Now, when I was in the state and the city, what happened is all our outstanding loans, all they do is refinance at higher interest rates. So if you have to pay off all those loans, you're actually bankrupt when you think about it. We are living on a cash basis in city government and state government, paycheck by paycheck. Whatever revenue comes in, then we pay the bills. In fact, those vendors out there who have contracts with the city or the state, you're wondering why you're getting your payments late in terms of your services. Mm-hmm. It's because we do not have money.
And so that allows me to gravitate back to what we said earlier about agriculture. I believe that one of the most difficult things is for us to come to terms with is that our leaders see development as an economy, the benefits of it, and being able to tax the houses. So when you put up a $5 million house and you invite and you build Ho'opili, they see tax dollars to drive that mechanism, that force that they're using. So is it the Jones Act, or is it the Joneses need to be voted out? That would be the grandest act. No more of these politicians who think that building houses and infrastructure brings jobs, and bringing rail to get people to the store and to the job is driving the economy, but eventually the economy falls flat. And now we're saying, well, it's because the Jones Act impedes the delivery of cheaper goods but it's still going to get out of control eventually, in my opinion, our observation.
The overall concern is our state of economy.
Mm-hmm.
The welfare of the people who live here in the state of Hawaii and the city of Honolulu. Basically, yes, we have failed in terms of being self-sufficient, taking away of ag land, meaning that we are more dependent in terms of goods coming from overseas.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite expensive. Like, I was just at the store yesterday, in the grocery store. I couldn't believe the prices, man, alive. You know, just for three apples, you're paying $5 basically.
Well, these golden delicious.
Oh, golden delicious! I guess you could call it that.
And at that price.
I didn't try it out at that price, and I was afraid to buy one, quite frankly. You know, and then it cost of living here is so expensive.
Well, could I interject on the Jones Act? And I have studied this very, very carefully. This economy here, we could be, given what we have in terms of climate, the mix of people that we have, the energy, and the location, we could be the most solvent enclave in the entire world. Because if you look at, as I say, Singapore with their 250 acres, Hong Kong with their 500 acres and $130 billion a year gross domestic product, and Hawaii, we're over here just swirling around with all of these tremendous assets. And if we were growing taro and lily koi and papaya and all the tremendous stuff that we can have here, like wetland taro, that stuff could be selling worldwide. I had a trip to Japan. I used to go there a lot, and I wanted to do a favor for a friend who had done something for me, and I said, what can I get for this friend? He said, well, buy them a cantaloupe. And I said, are you kidding? I went to buy a cantaloupe in Sapporo, and it cost $45. Now, you can imagine what a Hawaii pineapple would cost with, you know, in competition with that kind of thing. But because of the Jones Act, we cannot bring the supplies in to do it. We also don't have the ability to – we could outship if we had the stuff coming in to do production, but we don't have it. And, of course, if you're sending stuff away, mats and ships go away empty all the time anyway. So mm-hmm. right now – outflow is not a big deal, but they have a whole host of benefits that are very, very clear right off the bat as soon as we can get rid of the Jones Act. And if somebody could get into the U.S. Senate and make that happen, it would totally change this economy within 10 years.
How will that affect backhauling, for example? Let's say we open it up, modify the Jones Act, and permit these foreign vessels to come. What are they going to be backhauling?
No, that's exactly the point. They're not going to be backhauling anything. That's why they don't come here now. The foreign ships are not prohibited from coming here. They can mm-hmm. come, but they cannot go on and then do business elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So they bypass, do their major business in another state, and then bring back on Matson whatever it is that we need here that they're willing to bring.
And how do we get the empty containers from here? Like, for example, Samoa has plenty, and many of the smaller countries, Pacific countries, have an excess of containers, just for example, because they have no productivity and they're producing nothing to ship and sell out. And who wants to haul an empty container when they are moving merchandise from A to B, B to C, from A to C that came from B or whatever?
This is why, Carol, we have to diversify. You talked about agriculture. We can build agriculture once again.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people. I've dealt with the farmers out in the countrysides, and mm-hmm. they want to mass produce, but then they tell me that the cost of shipping is too much for them.
But not only the cost of shipping, but just the ability to do business. You can buy, for instance, you can buy Beefy 12, which is a thing you give to cows before you kill them to slaughter them. For about $6 a bag. The same bag in Hawaii costs between, at the minimum, $13 and up to $30 for one bag. Now, nobody's going to make any money when you're paying that kind of stuff for feed. And so that the whole economy has to change by having this influx of the ability to start making things, and then we'll have plenty of ways to get rid of the, to ship stuff out of here. And that's what it's all about.
We used to ship a lot of beef out of here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we still do, actually.
Yeah,
they
we
ship
still,
it out
but not as much as before.
Oh, no. Yeah, but they ship them on the Canadian thing called a Corral Line, and they mm-hmm. take them from Kauai High to Vancouver and put them on trucks and take them down to Idaho and California and fatten them and sell them up there. Mm-hmm. You can imagine what that does to Parker Ranch's bottom line.
Yeah, so, but because we have a monopoly shipping company here, it becomes very expensive. Now, you know, the bottom line is that the Jones Act is anti-economic for Hawaii and Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and it's a matter of biasness or favoritism, basically. You know, imagine if we were to amend the Jones Act. How would the West Coast feel about it? They wouldn't like it at all. because they monopolized everything, right, mm-hmm. when you think about it. So it's a matter of economic survival, basically.
So, yeah. Because we have this hour, and then yep. I said we didn't know exactly what's for how long. Let's go to 2 hours, and the phone is lit up here.
Okay.
You guys want to take and intersperse it in between? Is that okay?
Sure.
We didn't
sure.
have a format.
Yeah. Oh, you're the boss, Carol.
No, no, you guys are. You're my guest, and I'd be.
Well, we want to educate people. We want to share.
Okay, so let's do that, and then I hope the callers keep your questions short and points. A shot to share with other folks. Caller, thank you for waiting. Go ahead with your comments or questions.
Well, aloha to all three of you, and mahalo for doing the Lord's work to fighting corruption in Hawaii. I've got a question for Mr. Carroll. You know, we have a presidential candidate who's a little bit older than Mr. Carroll, and I'm wondering if he's considered or if he would be willing to run for U.S. Congress again.
I was hoping you mean John Carroll, because I'm just a teenager.
Yeah, John Carroll. Yeah.
Okay. Well, first of all, there's nobody older than I am, so but thank you for thinking that. But yeah, absolutely. I have thought about it. I have wanted to get into the U.S. Senate or in the House, for that matter, almost my whole adult life. But the fact of the matter is, I am not of an age or economic ability right now to even think about doing that. But I would say this: if there's if you want to call it a grassroots request or draft, if you will, I would respond to that because I am old, but my health is extraordinarily good. I just, for everybody's information, had open heart surgery, an aortic valve replaced, and my brain. I feel like I'm about 30 years old. Of course, I still look like I'm 100, but.
No, you don't. I'll describe.
But anyway, to answer your question, absolutely, I would respond to a draft, and I would feel I could get things done. And I've got 32 Hawaiian descendants that are all relying on great granddad here to get things done before he goes. So, yeah, if the answer is yes.
Okay, caller, is there any more? Anything else?
No, thank you. Aloha to you
all. Thank you.
You got my vote, John.
Thank you for calling in and holding on. We apologize for the delay in getting to you. But call back if you want to. 524-1080 is the number. Caller, go ahead with your comment or questions, and check your phone in the background radio. Go ahead. You got a beep.
Yeah. Thank you for taking my call. Mr. Carroll. Concern about the infrastructure for if the Jones Act is lifted, we have to have enough inspectors to inspect the cargo and everything, or do we have it now? And how does our longshoremen, the union, the people that unload the ships and whatnot, how does that affect the cost of goods coming into Hawaii?
Well, the thing of it is the longshoremen, I think, are being shortchanged by their leadership. Uh-huh. There was Isaac Fiesta was a ILWU leader in Hilo, and I was running for probably governor at the time, and I met with the ILWU leaders there, and we were outside, and I said, Isaac, if I take you down to the dock right now, what are we going to see?
Uh-huh.
He says, well, I don't know, there might be a cruise ship. I said, well, are there any cargo ships? No. I said, what does ILWU stand for? Uh-huh. Well, longshoremen. What do longshoremen do? They unload ships. Well, why are you guys in favor of keeping an act in place that keeps ships from coming into Hawaii? He never called me again and never, you know, talked to me again after that. But the fact of the matter is the longshoremen are key to the economy of this state. And I say God bless them, and if they just get it through their heads how much more money they would have and how many more stevedores could be getting jobs, I think that Jones Act would be gone in a flash.
And so we do have enough inspectors, you think, for if we do lift up the Jones Act, that they can go on the ship and check them out?
Well, I'm not sure what our docks will handle now, but I know between Kalaeloa and here, I think Matson probably owns about half the state right now. But that's by the way, one of the questions came up about who really benefits from the Jones Act, and that is everybody who owns Matson and Alexander Baldwin stock, because that's where the money's going. It's they have the highest. I think Matson is either Hawaii. Well, never mind. Won't go there.
Do we have any other cargo ships like Sealand or anything coming in?
I think Maersk and Horizon used to come in, but both of them
give
up. Gone to the wayside, you know.
Okay. Well, I think so. I'll be listening some more. Thank you.
Thank you for the call. Appreciate it.
Caller, thank you for waiting. Go ahead with your comments or question. Hello? You there?
Hello?
Yes, sir. We're waiting for you to make that grand entrance. You're there. Go ahead.
Yes. Yes, I am. Good morning to you all, and good morning to you, Carol Cox.
Thank you.
You're doing an incredible thing informing the public out there how imperative it is that this Jones Act is detrimental to the ongoing well-being and the future of Hawaii. And John Carroll and Rod Tam are fully aware of the corruption here in the state of Hawaii. It is inbred into this state where we've come to the realization that Hawaii has become a robber baron's paradise. These two individuals, John Carroll and Rod Tam, are fully aware of how our future is being threatened by the rail and by the Jones Act, the cost of living, our agriculture is being threatened. Our whole economy could be turned around if we could repeal the Jones Act and have some sanity put in place where our future is seriously taking a look at. And it's imperative that the public needs to be informed. And I would support John Carroll's throwing his hat into the political arena for Congress and Rod Tam fully aware he cares about the people here in Hawaii. So to everyone out there, support these two men. They are the only ones that I'm aware of, including, may I say, Tom Berg. And we all know what has been done with Tom Berg, who will actually represent the care and concern of the people here of Hawaii. So once again, I thank you, John Carroll, for having these two individuals inform the public here in Hawaii that it is imperative we get on board and support these two fine gentlemen. Thank you for the time.
I want to thank you very much for your comments. And there's one other person that was a strong advocate in amending the Jones Act, and it was a former congressman, Ed Case.
Yep, exactly.
And then I remember meeting him one day at Zippy's in the Vineyard, and he was with, I think, some friend of his, and I saw him. I said, you know, Ed, I appreciate what you did in terms of a congressman. And you spoke out in terms of trying to get the Jones Act amended. And he said, yeah, he learned a valuable lesson. And he got chased after that by Danny Noy. And basically he said he learned a valuable lesson. But it takes guts, basically, to do that. And you get threatened a lot, you know.
Yeah.
But you have to do it because it's a public way of life.
Yeah, so that we don't all sit around and sing kumbaya here. I don't want to leave that impression on anyone. There are some serious questions, and you guys are honorable people, and I support you or wouldn't have much to do with you. But there are serious questions, and we're not asking and we're not answering. And so hopefully before the day we do have, for example, and I'm going to go through, how much money does the Jones Act generate into the Hawaii's economy? And how much money does it generate if lifted? Right? Will it generate if we abandon it and put something else in place? What formal, reliable studies are you relying on? As you say, you don't really know of any, but you'll get me some.
Well, Carol, I just gave you one of them right there.
Yeah, I got that one, but I hadn't read it because
I understand, yeah.
But again, it will come back.
How much money does it generate if lifted?
Yeah. He's just recording it. Let's be wise.
Formal, reliable studies are...
Hello? Can you move? Okay, you didn't have to hang up. Just move your phone. Who conducted the study and who financed the study? When was it conducted? And can you say with certainty that the modifying of the act will benefit Hawaii's economy? With certainty now, not telling me that, well, it's the agricultural department, if we had cheaper prices. No, why? And what are these factors that are influencing the agricultural lack of control of the $45 potentially cantaloupe? These are not acts that individually acted on their own. These are behavior. So what's the guarantee that the people that modify the act are successful, what guarantees are in place that they're going to behave in safeguards that we won't be jacked up again? These are the kinds of questions, and I must ask them, and I don't want to sound like I'm playing hardball, but I don't want to play softball either, because I've never heard these questions asked or answered. They have been, but they've never been answered. And, you know, to say that agriculture, this is why. So I just want to make sure, let's
well, Carrie, those are very good questions. And during this legislative session at the state, there was a resolution that was introduced, mm-hmm. and they got shoved aside. It was questioning the Jones Act in terms of availability of opening up the shipping arena here in Hawaii. And you wonder, why did they shove that study, basically? They had already preconceived that they didn't want to amend the Jones Act. Mm-hmm. And a study is good, you know. In fact, I'm in favor, as a former legislator, of studies being conducted to have both sides be expressed.
Right, but express both sides. See, the other side is just as shortcoming on their answers, because they're already in place. They don't really believe they owe us an explanation or give a reason for modifying it. So they just blow us off. And I'm for a good economy and stable economy, but as well, you mentioned earlier about environmental. We'll talk about that. I mean, how do we regulate the ballast water? What are we going to do? I'm going to call and ask, do we have regulators and inspectors? We're already whining that we don't have enough and we don't inspect more than less than 1% or something like that of containers. So we'll get into all of that, but yeah. I'm going to get one caller here, okay. and then we'll go. Let's try, if you would, please.
Let me give you an example in terms of what's happening. When the legislature decided to not conduct a study, in terms of having a study on the Jones Act, mm-hmm. the pros and cons, basically it took an old type of scenario whereby in the old days where a parent got upset with a child and didn't want to hear the reasoning and say this beat the death out of the child by using a strap, quite frankly. That's the kind mm-hmm. of situation we have with the Jones Act.
Okay. Well, let's see here. Caller, thank you. Real quick, you got a comment or question?
Thank you very much for taking my call. Mr. Cox, Mr. Carroll, and Mr. Tam, thank you so much from so many of us who need you very much. I have a close friend from Chowchilla, California, 2,000-acre farmer, who came to Hawaii and said, you could grow almost anything you want here. I have just one question. Can you tell me the significance of the Pasha shipping line in terms of the Jones Act and or anything else involving the economy of Hawaii? Bless you, all of you. Thank you very much.
Go ahead. And we're down to the last minute, so you want to hold off and take that, because we're down to the last minute. Let's hold on, and caller that's on the line, hold on, and we'll be right back. Is that good?
Okay.
Right after the news on KWAI. It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Hey, thank you for joining us again. This is the Carol Cox Show right here at KWAI. You can pick us up on online at KWAI1080AM.com. Go there and click on, listen to live, and you can hear us live. Minor delay, but give you time to think before you speak. That's what we need here. Rod and I, and I'm joined by Mr. John Carroll, former four-time House member, State House member, and one-time Senate, and he is active attorney. And Rod Tam, former city councilman, former state representative, state senator. And we're talking about the Jones Act, but it's much more that's related to that. So join in, and thank you, gentlemen. Let's, as we promised, we'll get this next call. We don't want them to leave us hanging.
Sure.
And we don't want them hanging. Caller, thank you for joining us. Go ahead with your comment or question. Hello? Well, I guess he didn't want to join you.
Well, no, he might have fallen asleep.
You can call back if you like to, caller. Anyway, that's... Go ahead, guys.
Okay, well, you know, the last caller had mentioned about in terms of Pasha. Pasha came here in terms of a shipment coming several years ago, and the main thing they wanted to do was transport automobiles.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then when you had a sea train that left here, mm-hmm. basically they took over some of their some of their cargo. But then the majority of the cargo is to Matson. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I have to point fingers, if you know what I'm saying, at the State of Hawaii Public Utilities Commission, because they've been a roadblock in terms of allowing competition here. Right? But competition was controlled in terms of some various legislators here in the state of Hawaii and also a Congress meeting in terms of Congressman, former Senator Danny Noe. And they had some personal gains to be made, basically, and some biasness, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to recall in history, back in the kingdom, the Hawaiian kingdom, it was the kings that allotted the free trade. And that's how Hawaii came about internationally. You know, the fear now in terms of the West Coast to that of Hawaii, if you were to open up in terms of foreign trade here by amending the Jones Act, is that they would lose opportunity to be called the international center, because Hawaii is the international center.
Amen.
But in, we're not allowed to be doing so because of various biasness, you know. Danny Noe set up and it funded the East-West Center. But let me say this. The East-West Center basically doesn't really do much than protocol, based on studies. But it doesn't open up the foreign trade zone. And we could open up a lot, mm-hmm. you know, when you think about it. We have here a multicultural society. We have so many different ethnic groups here that could make Hawaii the golden place international center. It just like, for example, you mentioned about Hong Kong and Shanghai. In fact, going back to Hong Kong was the gateway to China.
Mm-hmm.
But then when Hong Kong got returned back to China from the British rule, it changed. Now Shanghai is the training center for China.
Okay.
And why? Because of the politics there. In fact, when I was president for United Chinese Society here in the state of Hawaii back then, 1997, people asked me, well, what's going to happen to Hong Kong? Are the military troops going to take over Hong Kong and kill off the trade there? I said, no. They're not going to come in. They're going to kill it off in terms of competition by opening up Shanghai.
Mm-hmm.
So they did, and Hong Kong kind of died off, you see.
Well, a couple of questions here. Will the this modification that you're advocating for, will it harm other states?
Well,
economies, will it have an impact? And
it may harm,
yes,
in terms of California.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there is, you've expressed concern for that, and you've reviewed it. Are we Is that a concern so that maybe you wouldn't need the Jones Act, or you make other modifications to
You need a modification of the Jones Act because we need to be treated fair.
No. I mean, if it's adopted, the change authorized and agreed upon, what will it do to other economies, state in the United States, not foreign?
Let me jump in on that one, okay?
Okay.
First of all, back when I first ran for Congress, 1966, I was running against Macon Matsunaga, and Nixon had run against Brown for governor. He had lost, I had lost, so the two losers are sitting. And I got to talk about 2 hours with him, and I had been a hawk on the Vietnam War. I'm saying we got to be there, we got to stop China, we got to stop this international. And what Nixon told me, and the reason this will you see that where this ties in, he said, John, we have no business in that war. We don't have any business in any war. If we want to have real worldwide peace, it's going to come through trade. And so to answer your question, the more trade that we have going on, the better off everybody's going to be, whether it's California, whether it's Timbuktu or, you know, Kapinga Morangi. It's the generation of wealth and affluence, and the more you spread it, the less chance you're going to have of anybody like the ISIS or, you know, revolutions going on, because people are not oppressed. And it only is going to happen through trade. It's not going to happen through war. So as far as I'm concerned, if we had opened up trade here, if we got rid of the Jones Act here and we can have our agricultural booming, we can be shipping stuff to California. We'll have more money to buy stuff from California. It just goes, you know, on geometrically. Mm-hmm. And the real thing that I have seen, and there's a thing called, you can call in, I don't know what the name of one of the people that helps me found it, but it shows how many ships are in the harbor at any given time. And we looked on one day, Singapore had 730 ships waiting. They're out in the channel waiting to go in and pick stuff up. And Hawaii had one ship.
Mm-hmm.
And that tells you the story. Here's this little 250-mile enclave with this huge economy, and here's our huge, beautiful, verdant, just totally gorgeous place to live, and then we're on the bottom of the economic level. We've got homeless. Everybody's always yapping about the homeless. They don't have jobs. They don't have anything they can do, and putting them into housing is just ridiculous to me. The only mm-hmm. thing that can really make a difference is to get this economy moving, and that can be done immediately if we get rid of the Jones Act.
Now, explain this process that is required to attain this goal of if and when. Can you, either of you, explain what is this process that we are looking to?
Yeah, you go to Congress and you introduce a bill that says that this law is damaging to my state because of A, B, C, D. You cite the different things you have. You put it in there, and then you make sure everybody votes for it.
So now, why hasn't that been done? I mean, we've had both Republican governors and presidents and
because
Democrats.
Lingle, I'll tell you why. Because Lingle was in the pocket of somebody, and she actually got the Jones Act prohibition taken out of the Republican platform.
Okay.
And we've never had enough Republicans in there to be able to get it done.
So the four federal legislators that are Democrat are completely opposed to modifying it or changing it?
As far as I know, I've been in debates with most of them except Schatz, and their own, and not Dakai also, but, well, excuse me, I've heard them all say it one way or another.
And then we have on the Republican side of the aisle, what percent or what number of our local legislators are opposed to changing it and advocating for change?
Bob McDermott's the only one that I know. He's the head of the Navy League here, and for some reason he's got it on his mind that he has to be able to keep his job as head of the Navy League. But every other Republican that I know of hasn't either expressed it or either for it or against it. But a lot of people don't even understand what the impact is, and that's why I really so much appreciate being able to come in here and mouth off about it. So
let me share something in terms of my experience as a legislator, and this was back in the 1980s and 90s. Okay, what happened is whenever the issue of the Jones Act came up for revision, the legislature was frozen, basically. In came Danny Noy, voicing, "Don't do anything. Do not do anything." Basically, that's what his word. So people were listening to him because he was known as the Godfather. okay?
Mm-hmm.
So people just listen to him, ignorantly, if I may say that, without being open-minded, without even introducing resolutions for study, the pros and cons of the Jones Act to Hawaii's economy. And that's what happened. And then I like your idea. Why doesn't the state of Hawaii study the issue in terms of the Jones Act, pros and cons?
Because I think the difficulty, it's already in place, and unless someone can show the opposition or those that are seeking to modify it, I would think the burden, why would you spend money on, if they think it's working okay and it's protecting, why would they be encouraged to spend money? Well, you'd have to bring the argument to the table, I would think, to stimulate and trigger some greater interest. You know, for example, the process, you say you go to Congress and then what? And then what if, questions such as this, what if we find that it is more harmful to the economy and to the American way than we thought? How do we reverse that? Do we then still get stuck in another quagmire like we are now, as you're representing that it's the ones for it is won't bulge? And so what have been given consideration?
Well, a complete neutral study would bring it to its head on the table, mm-hmm. in terms of whether it's good or bad, and which is what I favor. And yes, I'm a proponent for amending the Jones Act, mm-hmm. but then I'm going to have to be open-minded too. As a legislator, I have to be looking in terms of what's good for the people of Hawaii and be open-minded about it.
So when...
But then, unfortunately, what happened, it's going to take the public to sing the song and say, we want to have that openness. We want, in terms of the pros and cons, to learn about the pros and cons officially.
But then, I think that's what I'm attempting to drive at here, is demonstrate, is that unless the advocates for change can't make a good case, then we're going to be in this quagmire of paying $9 a gallon of milk.
Right.
And we're, because and if one were to ask me, what have I observed about this debate? It's one that many come to the table and say, we want to change.
Right.
And then you look at the more specifics of it. It seemed to have a partisan drive, and it seems, whether we say it is or isn't, you got Republicans want it primarily, and the Democrats are saying, we don't even want to talk about it. So how do we, something that important, so why don't we see a more aggressive approach on the part of the Republican Party, who, if it's good for us, then they should be throwing themselves on the sword daily. They should be on every talk show. And instead of telling Bob and Bobby that they shouldn't be having sex and all, they should be, you know, sticking it to the Democratic legislators saying, you're wrong. You're robbing the people. You're hindering their success, their well-being. If we, why? Why,
well,
why is it at
this time,
state?
It's been looked upon as the Jones Act as an issue of Republican versus them, of a Democrat.
Exactly.
And we should discard that, basically,
how
to put it off for the people.
How do we get past it? Because that's the quagmire.
Okay, I'm going to tell you, first of all, I'm the lousiest fundraiser. I cannot ask people for money, and if you can't ask for money, you can't get elected, is what it amounts to. So, and I have been preaching on this, and all over the place I've gone to, given speech after speech after speech, but I'm not, apparently not electable anymore. So, we need somebody that's going to be a strong advocate to get in there and let everybody know. And when I talk to different people and they find out what the impact of this is, and it doesn't take much thought to really figure it out, they're all in favor of it. But then, you know, I can't get elected to do this. And we've had people like McCain who went in and went for the build requirement, which was his absurdity. And he, I'd like to say, the only guy that really made a net, well, two did. Charles DeJoux made an effort, and Ed Case both made an effort, and they both got cranked by Inouye and the rest of the Democrat enclave over there. So, as far as I'm concerned, we're here today to get this going,
mm-hmm.
and so this is a good start. And I was happy to hear somebody said they don't, you know, they'd be willing to vote for me, which was pretty good news, because I am really ready to go do that. So.
Caller, thank you for waiting. Go ahead with your comment or question for Rod and Mr. Carroll.
Hi, Carroll.
Yes.
Hi. I've been listening thus far, at least for the past few minutes, about this debate in regards to, the Jones Act.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty interesting. But here's the issue, and I'm Albert Lanier, so just to let you know who's calling. Here's the issue. Here's the problem. When you look at the Jones Act, you have to look at, first and foremost, who are the interests involved? You know, I think part of the reason that most people don't care about it and most people don't view it as much of an issue is the fact that, first and foremost, you got to look at the fact that who are the interests behind the Jones Act? You got to look at the economic interests that are behind it, either, you know, being amended, you know, being in favor of it remaining or being altered. The second thing you have to look at would be the what would the economic impact be if we got rid of the Jones Act? In other words, and more important to that is what is the link between the Jones Act and Hawaii's overall economy? So you have to look at factors like that when we look at the Jones Act. And the problem I have, I mean, like I said, I've been a journalist for over 21 years in the state, and I think as long as I've been a journalist, even most of the time in Hawaii, I think this has been an issue for I don't know how many years, at least every year that I've been writing, every year that I've been freelancing. It just doesn't go away. Every so often it comes up, it crops up, and then it dies down again, and then it comes up, and it crops up and dies down again. In the end, I don't see any real valid economic reason for getting rid of the Jones Act. I don't. I just don't.
And that's based because they haven't offered an argument that would cause one to review it?
Well, you have to, okay, you, again, right. But you have to look at what is the economic impact? Okay, how will it impact disadvantageously impact Hawaii's economy? How will it advantageously impact Hawaii's economy? If you're going to get rid of it, what are you going to replace it with? How will that benefit Hawaii's economy? You have to look at the macroeconomic issues.
Hold on. There's a question right there. If they get rid of it, what, John, if the question basically, I'm
first of all, the primary thing is if you look at the shipping costs, you don't have to be a genius to figure that when you pay about $900 to ship the same container from here to China and to from Hawaii to California is over $1,000 or sometimes twice or three times as much to ship it three times as far, and the immediate impact would be to open up international shipping, and the shipping rates are what control prices. This is not hard math.
But here's the point.
The point is that people like you have kept this...
If you're going to get rid of the Jones Act, first of all, you have to look at what the specific impact is on Hawaii's economy. Shipping prices are fine, but what's your impact on Hawaii's economy, specifically consumer economy? If you can't make a case for that, then no one's going to care about the Jones Act. No one's going to make a case. How does it impact your bottom line? How does it impact your wallet? Your pocketbook, the average person's pocketbook. If you can't make that case,
we can make the case easily, and it's been made over and over again.
But apparently, no one cares.
I'll let him finish.
Right.
The problem is that the actual facts of what are going on here are never picked up by the newspaper and most of the people who write about it.
That's not true.
It's true because you tell me.
Hold on.
No, you hold on and let me finish. Okay.
Albert, hold on.
I'm not going to talk if he's going to interrupt me.
So let him finish. Go ahead, John.
What I'm saying is it doesn't take any brains at all to look and compare the prices for what people pay here and in California and Seattle and Oregon. And if that would ever be put out in terms of tables for the people of this state to look at, they would be aghast. And I'll say no more than that.
Well, again, you're making two points. Your first point was the media doesn't pick this up. It's not true. The Jones Act has been talked about in numerous articles over the years, and it's been talked about in the news media. Like I mentioned before, it comes up, and it's talked about, and then it goes down. So it's an issue that doesn't have a lot of consistent staying power. It goes up and down. It doesn't really remain for very long. Mm-hmm. The second aspect is that you said is, oh, well, if people just look at the tables between California and Washington and Hawaii, oh, they'll find out that the prices vary. That's a different argument. You have the internet. People can go and look and do research themselves. But the bottom line here is there hasn't been a compelling case for the Jones Act that would necessitate people getting involved to the extent of demanding change. That's the problem. If you're going to make an argument, if you say there's been a sufficient argument against the Jones Act, then why hasn't there been any change? It's not because of the news media. You can't make that argument anymore. You have the internet. People can do research. Okay. It's because, fundamentally, it's just not an issue that impacts people on a daily basis, on a pocketbook wallet basis.
Okay.
It's just not.
Okay. All right. I'd just like to say we'll put you down as undecided.
Okay. Well, I'm being realistic here. I'm being realistic. I'm looking at the reality of the situation.
Well, I'm looking at the reality. We have not had a politician who's got the guts to come forward against Alexander Baldwin and Ratson, and that's what this show's all about.
Well, it may be, but again, that just shows you that there isn't a compelling argument. If the politicians are coming out and saying, hey, we need to get rid of the Jones Act and we're going to do this to get rid of it, it means there isn't a compelling argument.
Al, I don't believe that even the best information presented to this climate of politicians would really influence them. It's about who is on the take and who's on...
Well, that's my point. That's why I mentioned it. You have to look at the interest. It's a combination of factors.
I understand, but, you know, in regards to what you stated, that even if the other side gave, or the ones that are advocating for change and modification... In this current climate and the way things are set up, there will not be, because they're not just predisposed and committed to their stance now because it's the right thing and not the wrong thing to do. It's because of the political and the financial benefits to them.
Well, that's my point. When I said you have to look at the interests that are either for it or against it, if the interests, the financial interest, the economic interest, corporate business, what have you, social interest, if they are for keeping the Jones Act, then the Jones Act will remain in place.
Right.
If you have interests that are against it, then the Jones Act would likely be either amended or gotten rid of.
Yeah, and
you have
and
to look at the interests.
Yeah, you know, one of the questions that I was going to get to it was, and you've asked it, but you know, for you folk, are you lobbying for an individual, or is this the cause, the overall, your vision is to change the and free the taxpayer and the consumer here in the state of Hawaii? Is there an individual company behind supporting this, or is it just you and others? Or how, if you could explain
that. Let me add in a comment in terms of John Carroll and I are concerned about the cost of living here, and we know that the Jones Act has influenced that. You know, statistics have shown on a nationwide basis with the United States that we are the fourth highest cost of living in the United States. You know, there are many young families that are moving away because they can't afford to live here. There are parents who are supporting their grown children and grandchildren because of the cost of living. When you look at the grocery store, the merchandise, the consumable things, even your staples, it's ridiculous what we pay for, basically. Your minimum wage, or even if you earn above the minimum wage, doesn't cover it. You know how many people are working two or three jobs, basically, just to make a living to buy staples? It's ridiculous. You know, and let me add this too. The news media, I have to bring it out openly, and I have nothing against the news media per se, okay? But the news media and the editorials have already stated their biasness to retain the existing Jones Act. So basically, I'm going to be open-minded. If we have all these questions right now, why don't we have a study to bring out all the pros and cons?
Well, I think the idea that you put forth for a study, that's a reasonable starting point. And again, the point that I made, one of the points that I made was the argument is very important because if you're going to sway people, if you're going to make this an issue that the average person should care about and thus lobby and put pressure on them, people have to be convinced in a visceral way and also in an intellectual way that this is in their best interest to get
rid of. I agree with you, and let me say
I
this.
I agree with that. That's right.
What happened is this. This is why you have the legislature. And being one of 28 years of service, one of the items in the legislature is to have resolutions for study. And every time there's a proposal for a resolution to have a study on the pros and cons of the Jones Act, it never comes about. Someone inside kills it, basically, because of biasness. Now, I agree with you. We should have it brought out to the table, the pros and cons.
Right.
Because we all have different individual proposals or individual biases, basically, about whether we want the Jones Act or not. Okay? So let's bring it to the table. You know? And it's the responsibility of the legislators. Here, especially in the state legislature, whether it be Democrat or Republican, to bring the issues to the table and resolve it. They're not doing it at this time. This is very frustrating. And it's the responsibility of Congress, too, to be open-minded.
Right.
Okay? So, basically, when you think about it, we are losing in terms of a democratic form of government where government is owned by the people and for the people. Right? Happened to that.
Right.
Okay? You know, there was a former colleague of mine, and I learned about 2 weeks ago that John Carroll told me about former colleague, City Councilman Aquino.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to some constituent of his, you elect me, I don't have to listen to you because you elected me. That is not the right attitude for any elected official. You're supposed to be representing the people. And if there's uncertainty, let it be brought to the table, and discuss it openly and formally. Have some neutral party, in the case of the Jones Act, bring it out.
But I will say this. The person who said that is at least being honest. Because if he's telling you that he doesn't have to listen to you, that is, in essence, what he's saying is, I listen to other people.
And he didn't say that. He just said, he just quoted it. I don't want to interpret what people's thoughts are. And it's wrong to do that. You know, basically, I've seen you guys' editorials in that Star Advertiser. A lot of times, it's slanted both one way. Okay? I always look for neutral ground in terms of openness. And I think, quite frankly, the newspaper, the news media should stop printing these editorials of what they think. They should express only those ideals or editorials of people rather than come out of a biasness.
Well, that's what an editorial is for. It's
well, basically, you know, this is why a lot of people tell me the Star Advertiser is not a worthwhile newspaper to read because it's really
disagree with that.
Yeah, it's not really in terms of factual at all.
Yeah.
Right? It's biasness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, the
Star Bulletin newspaper was much more open. But unfortunately, with the buyer now of the Star Advertiser, who owns Midweek, he retained the editorial staff and the managers of the Advertiser. So basically, he didn't, and when you think about it, why did he do that? When the Advertiser was going bankrupt, how crazy for him to retain the editorial managers and staff of the Honolulu Advertiser.
Well, I mean, that's a separate issue, but I think you raise a good issue about that. I mean, the whole idea of media is not something I'm going to get into, but I've been complaining about certain media outlets for years. I'm a freelancer, so I'm independent. I don't write for the Star.
Well, do you agree with me then that we should have it brought to the table, the whole issue of the Jones Act, like John Carroll, I agree. Yeah, John Carroll saying and Carol Cox is saying basically. Let's bring it to them. It's been discussed for decades.
Yeah, what I'm saying.
Hasn't fully been debated, even in the way that's being done on this show right now. I've talked to a legislator or two, I won't say who, but I've talked to them about this issue. And I've seen this come up in certain new articles here in Hawaii. But the problem is it comes up, and then it's like a wave. It goes up, and then it fades away.
So what? This could be a guy driving a yellow lemonade-colored Cadillac. When you say you don't want to mention his name, don't want to hear what he has to say if he's the Ghost Rider. Who is he? I mean, this is consistent with what the people that want to advocate change. We talk about the media, we talk about the politics, and I ask, show me a model, a sensible model where someone has said, look, but don't tell me we need to change it because we say it needs to be changed.
Right.
You understand?
That's part of my point.
And I think what I would, if my advice to anybody that want to change it, I agree with the change. I agree if it's going to benefit the consumer and it's going to be good for the environment, because we haven't even stepped down and addressed those lowly issues of environmental, how we have handled the ballast water by placing a demand for bigger ships, more ships. What is that going to do to environments in other areas where they have shipbuilding? Is that going to impact the shipbuilders here? All of that. So I think they, the advocates, should task themselves with coming up and finalize this debate and not referencing media. Not, because even if the media didn't say
right.
anything, you still, the reality is it a benefit?
Right.
And why do you want it to change? Change because
right.
somebody's in the back room wanting to change it because they're going to make some profit? And then where do we leave? What elements will be in place to protect the consumer once we engage in that and build that relationship?
Well, here's one thing that I would suggest to people. You know, try sending something off to Civil Beat. I mean, if you want to start trying to get the ball rolling, try doing something, sending it off to Civil Beat. They have, like, community voice.
Yeah, tell them to send me some money for the advertising.
Well, but I'm at least that's one form where they do it.
Yeah, well, put it on a utility line.
Right.
Or tell
but
them to get Carol
the
Cox.
Internet, like doing a video and putting it on YouTube.
No, I mean for that little advertisement you gave them, just call Civil Beat now and tell them to post a KWAI 1080 AM on their website. You know, I mean.
That makes sense.
I'm just kidding you. Yeah. Go ahead.
Can I interject something?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, just for everybody's information, it's called as a Journal of Maritime Law and Commerce, which is maritime merchants. It's basically their intellectual center. And they have said it's imperative to remember the GAO, the Government Accounting Office, has done three studies on the Jones Act over a 30-year period, and they cannot make a precise determination. And this is the kind of crap that we've been listening to for
What's
years
that? They
and
can't
years
make
and
a
years and
precise
nobody.
Determination.
That just gets to my point, though.
No, I'm saying it. I'm saying your point is absolutely correct.
Right. That's the problem. If you could specifically, economically dictate and state to me, getting rid of the Jones Act would lead to this specific economic benefit, the specific consumer benefit, the specific economic other aspect to the average person and to businesses and to other agents and actors in the economy, then it would be worth getting rid of it.
Yeah, well,
but I haven't seen that. That's the problem.
Yeah, let me tell you this. If I'm in the U.S. Senate, we will have that study, yeah. and it'll be not at my expense. But
yeah. Al, we have another caller.
Okay.
Al, let me get in. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you, guys.
And thanks for joining.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
If I may say, the only way that you're going to bring it to the table in terms of a full discussion, the pros and cons of the Jones Act, is for the public, the people, to call the legislators and demand that we brought it out on the table.
But there needs to be salesmanship across the advocates for change. I mean,
basically, I'm looking at it fundamental, you know, to get the legislators off their seat.
Let me just give you a little poke in the side here and say to you that the people in this state are so removed from the participation in government that you can tax the living hell out of them. Mm. And all they'll do is go to the mailbox, lick the envelope, and send it in. They've already been poked and robbed and ripped off, and I'm one of them. And I can't bring myself to going down there and challenging them because there's no cohesiveness in the community objecting to this. So the advocates for change need to incorporate a thought, in my opinion, that to be successful, give explanations and show models and show why, rather than just a guy who shows up on Saturday night and says, you know, what you doing? Want to come to a meeting? Let's talk about the Jones Act, you know. And then Billy Paul sings Me and Mrs. Jones, because that's basically all you're getting is a song and a dance, right? Caller, go ahead with your comment. Thanks for waiting. You there?
Hello?
Going
Am
once.
I next?
Go ahead.
Here's the bottom line. There's no need for another study. All the studies have been made. Anybody out there?
Where are they now? Let's not make any representation. I'm asking for a specific, bona fide, and who did the study? What was it about? And what's the result? Where is it? They're out there. I'm with you guys. I believe that
if there's necessary and we can demonstrate change and this would be the solution, fine, let's do it. But if it's just another gyration of,
Carroll can resolve any issues of doubts. He's done thorough research. Just take a look at the evidence.
Well, I'm a believer and agree with you too, because that's why I have him on the show. But I'm not the only citizen in the state.
Well, excuse me. Let me. I'd like to thank the caller for his comment. And what we have done, I totally forgot about it. We did a lawsuit in the United States Ninth Circuit. It got sent up to Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and it's very clear in there that all three justices or judges who read this appeal say that we have a valid case against the Jones Act, but we're kept out on the basis of standing. So this is so clear-cut that it's a very, very terrible impact on this state. They had one judge asking the federal U.S. attorney, are you saying that this is fair? And he's talking about the difference between shipping a car from Hawaii to Shanghai via California as opposed to direct. And they really almost slaughtered him on the oral argument, but they got us on standing and have given us a very clear-cut way to go. And by the way, I'm getting ready to refile that lawsuit, and I need a few more plaintiffs that are people who can come in and say that they're in business, that the economic supplies that they use to sell or make their business go are more difficult and more expensive to get because of the Jones Act. Anybody who's got that kind, they can come in, and I will do it free. So,
and just let me add one thing in support of John's Carroll's statement. Matson and Alexander Baldwin have a stranglehold on the economy of Hawaii. It's a no-brainer. Looking at the evidence and based on the research that Mr. Carroll has done, it's clearly evident that the economy is kept under lock and key because of these two entities, Matson and Alexander Baldwin. Of course you're not going to have the media here in the state of Hawaii report the truth because it will affect their bottom line.
Well,
and that's,
speaking,
you know, and that's a sad state of affairs in Hawaii.
Speaking
but
of the truth here,
we have a media that is not responsive.
I don't see the logic. Hold on, caller.
Only represents the moneyed elite.
Can you hold on for a minute? Okay, thank you. All right, let me just say the representation that. We discussed the word Pasha, and this is a real live concern that I have, and I'm sure others have. And so we mentioned Pasha, and he's a baby doll. Pasha is the baby doll of this whole thing. He's quite often shows up in these debates, and people reference him and how Pasha. Well, here are the concerns that there are side effects to these things. Where is Pasha operating out of?
It's a mainland company.
It's a mainland company,
yeah.
The George Pasha of Sacramento base.
Right.
So where is he operating from?
In Hawaii, it's the state land.
Right, state Hawaiian homelands, lands that we've talked about this on the radio, on this show, where we lay out emails where he got favoritism from DHHL. So I'm submitting to you that when we say we want to advocate for change and better get things better for the population, let's go back and understand and be honest about this. The Hawaiian community is being shortchanged in this, and we've demonstrated that through emails that where they got waiver basically from Hawaiian Homeland to establish that and then engage in renting land that the Hawaiian homeland should be getting rent for. So these are the little impacts that go unspoken, and I think it's disingenuous on the side that's advocating for it in changing the Jones Act, because there's going to be impacts, negative impacts on everyone, unless it's not what's being said, it's what's also not being said. And PASHA, in my opinion, and we've demonstrated that with the documentation and the facts through UIPA and public records requests, where they say, they being DHHL, we didn't charge them rent because we were having break-ins on the land and abuse, so we just gave them a waiver. Meantime, smaller companies wanted places to rent land to function and operate. So what happens? DHHL allows PASHA to rent this land to these people. Now, we might be originally talking about shipping and the Jones Act, but let's talk about the act against the Native Hawaiians. Why would the Native Hawaiian community bear that expense on behalf of others? So I bring that up to say that this is what we as people, that, and I think that having a stranglehold, to be walking up and getting gas and told gas prices went up today to $4 something. Oh. And then you read the next line is that Mattson is asking for an increase in the ship, what is that term? And it's like, wait.
Service charge.
Yeah, and okay, and then I go, wow, look, the gas price went down a dollar. And we don't see Mattson asking to give it back. So there are some elements and some woes that changing the Jones Act in theory would probably remedy. But I also don't want to give the impression that we're starting from scratch as pure and honest as far as the advocates for change.
Well,
I don't know if you know that history, you see.
Well, I do. And, Carol, what I want to say, you have hit the nail on the head, because right now, assuming that I would run for U.S. Senate, the lack of leadership here, the fact that you have, 27,000 half, 50% Hawaiian blood quantum people on the list waiting to get land, the fact that you've got people that can be put off their homestead that they've been on for 99 years because they're below a 25% blood quantum, all of that land that's Hawaiian Crown land should be in the hands of Native Hawaiians, not in the Hawaiian Homes Commission, not in OHA or anybody else. That's number one. Number two, we've got all these potholes. We've got all this big talk about the rail and all the great things we're going to do. The fact of the matter is we do not have leadership like guys like Frank Fossey, guys like George Ariyoshi, who had their eye clearly on the ball, and that is the kind of leadership I'm looking for. If I see it in younger guys, I'm going to be for them. If I don't see it, I probably do
something. And I believe you're for that change and good change. But I'm just suggesting, basically seizing the opportunity to say, hey, look, there's this world as you're presenting it, and there's another world that the community is witnessing. So maybe that too, delivering the full package, straight talk, PASHA or whoever it is, no favor. Linda Lingle brought him in, correct?
And
she knew and look at his donations and how he got, and there was a military where he stores cars over there, and being able to put tents on the military site, the former. How did he get that? Where were the bids and all of that? So we're saying we're going to fix the economy by changing the Jones Act, and we're just gouging the Native Hawaiian community. So is that what we want to be noted for, too, in this effort to change on the betterment for everybody and victimize the Hawaiians?
No.
So that was a question I have. So
oh, no, absolutely not. I'm saying the exact opposite.
That was going to be one of my questions is, what do you do? Because, you see, if we change it, and what political influence will you have to say, well, we're changing and we're going to do this and we need more land and the harbors, or are you going to give the Native Hawaiian their just dues and ceded lands and waters that's unsubmerged lands and all of that? We didn't have enough time, but we'll talk about that.
Well, okay.
Are your efforts going to address those issues?
Absolutely.
As well?
My number one,
and how are they?
Number one on my list actually is to get Hawaiian homelands recipients who are available to not only have the land, but also to have it in fee simple absolute, and to get rid of the Hawaiian Homes Commission and save that money. They're number one on my list, and I have 32 part Hawaiian descendants, so I don't say that with less than a lot of fervor. But the impact of the Jones Act is very, very clear to me. It's clear to the Ninth Circuit judges, and I think that our next lawsuit is going to have the federal court system set aside the Jones Act. It's supposed to be done politically. The only reason I'm even thinking about U.S. Senate is because I could probably get it done by making a strong enough argument among the Republicans in the U.S. Congress right now.
Carol, you mentioned in terms of others who are in the act, basically, get affected. Let me mention this in terms of trying to close, because we have, 10 minutes more?
10 minutes, right? And you got two calls. Do you want to answer them?
Let me say this first.
Let him answer the
call. Let me say this real short, that what we concern here is the economic benefits by revising the Jones Act, for Hawaii's people, which are the consumers. Now, there are other effects, basically, those for and against the Jones Act. And this is where you look in terms, like I remember the book called The Act of War. The Act of War says, learn who your opponents are and know who your allies are. Study them before you do the battle, basically. What environment you're working in, also to your fighting, what terrain you're involved in fighting the battle, and so forth. Know everything. Now, I'm in favor, although I'm an opponent in amending the Jones Act, I'm in favor of having a full-blown study. But to get a study out which answers all these questions that one has, you have to get the legislature to do that. And the only way to do that, I'm a grassroots person, the way to do that is to have the people of the state of Hawaii call their legislators and demand that we want to have it done.
A real review.
One that's done by a neutral party. Okay. Now, the neutral party I see in the legislature, which is recognized, is the legislative reference bureau, which officially would pass the House and the Senate and go to the legislative reference bureau, and they would be the body to review pros and cons.
And their legal advisor would be Colleen Hanabusa.
I had to say that.
Carl, go ahead with your comment or question. Thank you for waiting.
Hanabusa, as the United States representative, quotes that in 2003, a review by the Maritime Task Force took place, and it determined, quote, the Jones Act costs Hawaii residents $5.52 per year per person, less than 2 cents per day. Quote, quoting Hanabusa, that is a small price to pay for the security of our state and our nation. It goes on, Rep. Hirono, now it's U.S. Senate, also saying that the Jones Act is a good thing. Just calling in to let you know, a study task force was done in 03. If you want to get all the criteria and data, go look it up. It's in the Hawaii Business News, done in 2012 of August by Stacey Ewan. You can find out everything you need to know about the Jones Act. It's been done. The study was done in 03.
Who funded the study?
It was done in 03, and it's brought up by Colleen Hanabusa, and it just says, I'm referring to an article in the Hawaii Business magazine.
Yeah, but does I've seen that article.
But does it refer in detail, speak to all of the specifics?
Well, I think the bottom line to the consumers who, you know, if we're going to simplify things, $5 back in 03 per year isn't an accurate assessment when you're talking about a business or a farmer who's going to pay far greater.
Right. Well, then I say shame on the advocates for change, because they should have had that out there.
Just want to let you know, one study after another, you know, it's all out there already. I think we already know the facts.
Well, yeah, but the others don't. See, we specialize in getting those facts, Tom, but the general public don't. They're busy trying to get to work.
Well, I agree with John. I believe it costs way far greater than $5.52 a year on our goods.
Amen.
All right, mahalo.
All right. Hey, thank you.
Bye-bye.
They also have been studied in terms of the cost of consumer goods, basic staples, with that of Hawaii to that of other states in the United States. And the cost is just outrageous at this time.
Caller, go ahead with your comment or question.
Thank you for taking my call. One word that seems apropos is gestalt, a universal organic interdependence of everything we've been talking about, revenue, expenditures, agencies, issues, arguments, comments, the Jones Act. And when there is pain, you'll have passion. And when the public has passion, they may want leadership. And as of right now, I'm not sure who could lead us. The three of you could lead us. I don't want to throw that upon you, but thank you so much.
No,
for
you mean the two of them can lead.
No, you're there too.
I'm still trying to learn how to turn on the radio.
If I may say, all of us can lead, because this is supposed to be a democratic society where the people own the government.
Yeah, well, right. this is my part contribution to leadership. I try to get you to think and talk and speak about it. Okay, thank you, Richard. There's a couple other callers.
Thank you, Bob.
Anything else? Caller, thank you for calling. Go ahead real quick. We got 4 minutes.
Yeah, Mr. Tam, besides calling your representatives, would a petition be better, or how much names do you need? Do you need a mean people to sign the petition to get something done?
I'm not doing anything as far as that. I'm just sitting by, and I've told there's about six or eight people who've asked me to run, and I said, okay, you get a petition together, or a draft, if you will, and if there's like 10 or 15,000 names, then I would respond to that. But short of that, 87-year-old guys are not really welcome in this arena. So.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Caller, thank you for calling. Go ahead with your comments or question. Hello. Yes.
Mr. Thomas Burke, the one that used to be on the seat in the Senate.
Mr. John Carroll. John Carroll or Tom Rod Tam?
Tom, was that Tom Burke?
Tom Burke just called in and was talking.
He's calling in and talking.
Okay.
He's going to come on again and sit on the council?
I miss him. Pardon me?
I miss him. Is he going to run?
He hung up so quick. I don't know. I try to get him to stand still for a minute.
Is that Chinese guy going to run also? I like those two guys.
I don't know. Are you Chinese, Rod?
Yes, I'm Chinese. I'm fourth generation.
Rod Tam.
Good. Is he going to come in and sit on the council too?
I'm running for a state.
Well, it's
Senate.
Not that corrupt. He has to first run and then win.
Anyway, I'll vote for them. I'll look for their name, and I'll see what seat they're sitting on. And I'm going to vote for them because, you know, when we want to do something, the government says we cannot do it. 50 years later, everybody's doing what we wanted to do.
Yeah, that's true.
You know that?
Yeah.
We bought our house. We wanted to change the roof and put out easy for us. They said, no, you cannot do it.
Mm-hmm. Hawaiian Electric, that's another big ripoff.
Hundreds and thousands of dollars.
Right.
Unnecessarily, when all we could do was scrape the thing, roll the tar and the paper on there, and make our roof. They say, no, you need a permit, and you have to do it within certain time.
Right, and then all of a sudden change the rules. So
you can't do this and you can't do that, but now you know what? Everybody's doing what they want to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you. We're down to the last minute. I will give these gentlemen... Hey, thank you for listening, and thanks for calling. But you see, you got your work cut out for you while you've been away. Well, these guys have been at play.
No, I just wanted to say that Ed Wagner, who's a real advocate for justice in this town, filed as plaintiff in a lawsuit to really go after HECO and the PUC because of the nonsense that's going on with the solar business here. I won't say anything more than that. But, mm-hmm. But Carol, I would like to thank you so much for allowing us on your show. It's a real honor.
Well, we'll do it again. I just get tired of the whispering of the Jones Act, it's some scary. I think it has some benefits of looking at the change, but nobody's making that case. And, you know, Rod,
well,
you got anything in closing?
All I want to say is that be free to call me, all those listeners out there and others. And my cell number is error code 808-216-5454. And once again, I'm a supporter of amending the Jones Act. It's a matter of terms of consumer price goods. You know, there have been comparisons made in other states to that of the state of Hawaii. And mm-hmm. Our cost of goods are so high because of the Jones Act, which is creates a monopoly for medicine. Plain and simple. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. I want to thank Mr. John Carroll and Mr. Rod Tam for joining me. This is the Carol Cox Show. And speaking of HECO, there's a recent fire out. Actually, it's occurring right now on the Nanakuli side and costing some substantial amount to fight it. And I'm told, and I don't have the facts behind this yet, but I'm told that I know one occurred Thursday from arcing from HECO lines. So we should be looking at HECO and recovering the firefighting costs on that. I really believe that it's the appropriate thing to do. And because we, if an oil company or molasses spilled into the harbor, we seek to them to compensate. So I think that HECO should be required, if they are responsible, and the arcing, then they should bear the cost of reestablishing the habitat and what have you. So we'll see you next week, and thank you for joining us. Aloha.
Thank you. Aloha.